Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Period Party. I am here with Bridget Danner. Hi, Bridget.
Hey, Nicole. So happy to be here.
Hi. Thank you. I'm so happy to have you here. This is going to be such an awesome show. Today, we're talking about the connection between hormones and your gut health. Bridget is going to be breaking it down for us. And before we get into that, I just want to do a little intro so that everyone knows who you are and where you're coming from and your experience in all of this, because I know you have a lot. So Bridget runs an online women's health community. It's called Women's Wellness Collaborative. And through this community, she interviews experts in women's health through blogs, videos, podcasts, and online summits. I have been a guest on a number of occasions, which I'm very honored about. And Bridget practiced Chinese medicine for nearly 12 years and has performed over 12,000 treatments. She is also a certified functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, and she's worked extensively in the fertility field and has worked with many professional women in helping them find health within their busy lives. I am so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to just share now a little bit about what you're going to talk about. So we're covering the main health symptoms of a compromised gut, nutrient absorption, and how it happens in the gut and how important it is to hormonal health, as well as detoxification of hormones and how that happens in the gut too. It's kind of a thing that's happening here. We need to focus on our gut health in a big way. And then also too, lab testing options for assessing gut function and things that you can implement right away to start improving your gut function and gut health. So I am stoked to get into this. Do you want to just jump right in and start talking about the main health symptoms? Because I feel like a lot of people think only gut health issues are a sign of a compromised gut, but there are definitely other issues too, right?
Yeah, there are other issues too, but I'll just describe some of the gut ones first, because I think mm-hmm. we normalize some things that go on for us and we should get those talked about. So, for instance, you know, if you say, well, I only have a bowel movement every 3 days, but that's normal for me. Not in fact normal. Mm. If you don't have a bowel movement for more than 24 hours, you're constipated. You know, also, if your stool is very loose, it's loose all the time, it's not formed into a log, that's a sign of an irritated gut. So that's something to be addressed as well and not normalized. Being very bloated at the end of the day or after meals is also not normal. If you feel like your pants fit in the morning and they don't in the evening, that's a problem. So I just want to mention some of those things. Also, you know, frequent gas, belching, that kind of a thing. And then, you know, feeling like you're in a food coma after you eat is not normal. That's something to be addressed. And then, like you said, outside of kind of these foodie kind of gut symptoms, skin issues are a really common sign of a compromised gut. The skin is like another layer, sort of like our gut is a layer. And when we're not detoxifying and we're clogged up, often things will come out in the skin. So pretty much always the skin is related to the gut. And then I'll lastly mention headaches and migraines are often having to do with inflammation that's arising from the gut.
Huge. I was going to say the skin thing is a really big deal. I feel like if I were to eat something that doesn't agree with me, I find that I tend to like break out in hives or something like that, or I get itchy. So it's definitely, there's such a connection there. And I think that we are, you know, in conventional medicine, they really don't put those two together at all. So a lot of people, especially women, are dealing with a lot of acne issues and they have no idea that it's basically caused by some kind of inflammation in the gut, happening in the gut.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we want our skin thing to go away, but we don't really want to deal with all the stuff that it takes to get it to go away. So we just want to use a steroid cream. You know, we go to the dermatologist and they give us some kind of cream or, you know, they put us on antibiotics for our skin, which mm-hmm. further is bad for the gut. So really, unfortunately, you know, your skin issues are trying to tell you something. The headaches, it's your body trying to tell you something. And often that means, you know, changing some foods that you're addicted to, or just, you know, eating more slowly, cooking more often, nourishing the gut. And it does take some time, but it's also super rewarding and also supports our hormones, which we're going to talk about more. So that's a connection that people sometimes don't make as well. Like, oh, well, you know, my tummy hurts and I have these period issues, but these are two different issues. However, you know, the gut is where we get so much information and we take in so much nutrition. So it's really important to hormone health. I can just kind of move on into that if you like.
Absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, the one way that we need our gut to be healthy is that's where we absorb nutrients, and we even kind of make some nutrients or kind of process some nutrients there. We make neurotransmitters there. So for example, you know, Nicole, like a lot of the B vitamins are really important for our cycle. So those need to be, you know, extracted from our food, from healthy stomach acid and enzymes and a non-leaky gut, a healthy gut lining. So those need to be absorbed. Also, if we think about thyroid, which really controls our cycle in a lot of ways, we need to absorb iron and trace minerals. We need fat-soluble vitamins. So those all have to get into us, and that entry point is the gut. So the gut lining, again, needs to be basically open enough and not, you know, not inflamed and congested in such a way that the nutrients can't get in, and also tight enough to keep out immune complexes or like protein peptides, like undigested kind of gunk from the gut that should not be crossing that barrier and getting into the liver and the bloodstream. So, and then we know that autoimmunity is increasing among women, and that can be throwing things off too, you know, leading to period problems. So yeah, pretty important area.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really curious about the detoxification of hormones happening in the gut, because again, I think that we don't realize the extent of our, you know, how our gut health impacts our hormonal and our period health, our fertility, all of these things to the extent that it does. So I'm curious about that, like the detoxification of hormones and how that happens.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you something interesting to me, Nicole. When we were recording the hormone summit that we'll talk about later, Dr. Laura Bryden, who you know, was saying, you know, she really thinks the gut is king for detoxification. And we always think about the liver, and, you know, it's more popular to kind of cleanse the liver in our culture. And the liver is, of course, very important. But phase two detox, where, you know, the toxins were broken down and in phase one, but now they need to be attached to something and moved out of the body. A lot of that is happening in the gut. So the bacterial environment needs to be healthy. The gallbladder needs to be working and need to be excreting bile, which helps like bind with the toxins and move them out. So say you're constipated, or you've used antibiotics recently, or, you know, you're eating a lot of processed foods and sugars, and just that environment is not healthy, then we're kind of reabsorbing hormones back into us, and they're going to probably be the more toxic type, like the more toxic estrogen, the more inflammatory estrogen at that point. So, and then we're getting that feedback that there's the hormones in the system, which is not the correct feedback for, you know, the master gland that's trying to decide how to make hormones. So yeah, really interesting. And we'll talk later about things to do to support it. But I thought it was so interesting that she said that the gut is kind of number one. And I still need to learn more about it, Nicole, but the estrobilome is sort of a bacterial environment that breaks down estrogen in the gut. And she was really emphasizing how important that is. So yeah, you know, also think about your microbiome when you think about removing hormones.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to me how our different bacteria in our gut will determine whether we're actually breaking down estrogen effectively. And then, of course, like you said, if you're constipated, you're likely not excreting it. And so I remember Sarah Gottfried saying a long time ago in my training that with estrogen, the core thing is to use it and lose it. And so many of us are not doing that effectively. And so ultimately, like you said, it's just being reabsorbed back into the bloodstream and creating a state of either excess estrogen or estrogen dominance over progesterone, which of course can lead to all kinds of issues like PMS and PCOS, et cetera. So I'm curious about, you know, like this inflammation in terms of like what, you know, what causes this inflammatory state in our gut and for most people or women. I know a lot of women are listening to this, so mostly women. What's causing that inflammatory state?
Yeah, well, let's just try to visualize it. So let's say you're a busy working woman, and we'll throw a lot of variables into this. Let's say that you just recently, you're on birth control, you recently came off, and, you know, let's say you had strep throat a couple months ago and you took antibiotics. Let's say also you've been super stressed at work. And that reduces your what we call the secretory IgA, like a mucosal barrier in the gut. Let's also say that we're eating on the run. We're not cooking and chewing. We're maybe getting some inflammatory oils and GMOs in restaurant food. We're maybe eating some foods that we're kind of addicted to that aren't serving us, right, like some sugars or, you know, processed foods. Maybe we have a cheese addiction or something like that. So this is all coming in, and, you know, things aren't being chewed. Things aren't being, you know, perhaps broken down because it was stress. You know, we're not rested and we don't digest. You know, we're not in the rest and digest. So you can just imagine, you know, that food is going in, barely chewed, not high quality, maybe even that the body sees as a toxin or an invader. And you can just kind of picture what a hot mess this all is in our gut. It's a lot for the body to deal with. And a lot of that is inflammation. You know, the gut lining is irritated. And then, you know, our body's processing it. And it's a lot. So that inflammatory state just stresses our body. It's like an open wound that we're just walking around with all the time. And if your body is always dealing with that, it's not going to be able to focus on making you sex hormones. You're going to get, as you know, Nicole, what they call the pregnenolone steal. You'll be making cortisol to deal with this, like, emergency, which is the chronic state of an inflamed gut. And you won't be in that kind of peaceful copacetic state where your body is getting ready to reproduce. So that's a little primer. You know, digestion uses most of our energy as it is, like 70%. So adding even, you know, like 5% more of work for the body to do, you know, that's 5% you needed to feel good, to have energy through the day, you know, to have a normal cycle. So it's a big tax.
Wow. Yeah, 70% of our energy. And I suppose if we're eating some heavy food all the time too, like a lot of, you said, processed food or a lot of meat or starches and not a lot of lighter foods like vegetables and fruit, then I think it's going to probably take even more of our energy, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, we talked earlier about like the food coma. that's how you feel after you eat. I don't think it's the worst thing to have, you know, a big meal sometimes, but if, you know, especially when you're kind of waiting till you're really hungry, you'll tend to overeat or make poor choices or eat out. And, you know, the food quality is going to be worse. And, yeah, your body's going to be really dealing with that. You're going to be kind of in a daze for an hour or two, and then you're going to maybe have low blood sugar and want to, you know, get a soda or something. So just put you on that roller coaster.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because, like what you were saying about this inflammation and how it leads to our bodies not making as many of the right hormones, but making too much of the hormones that aren't necessarily bad, but are bad in high amounts over long periods of time, like cortisol, for instance. So that's, you know, for everyone listening, I think that that's a really important connection. It's almost like the mind-body connection, a perfect example of that right there. that if your, you know, your emotional state is, your emotional state impacts your gut health, and then your gut health will then impact your hormones, which will then mess with your emotional state again. Basically, it's like you said, roller coaster in a sort of loop of, hormonal madness. But I'm curious about also about lab testing options, because I think that there's a lot of confusion around testing options for assessing your gut function and whether it works or not, and who to see for that as well, because that's another, I think, another layer of confusion there.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to dig into it, but I might not totally relieve all the confusion, because I think my opinion is changing a little bit too on testing. You know, I was trained very traditionally in Chinese medicine. I didn't know anything about labs, didn't know how to read labs for people, none of this. But as I started to get interested in functional medicine and nutrition, I was like, I really need to kind of get a handle on some labs. So first thing I studied was blood labs, and I'm actually thankful I did, because, you know, those are some of the most accessible for people to get, you know, from their doctor or whatever. And they do tell a lot. They can tell a little bit about gut function, but some of the other tests I'll mention are more specific, and I'll list them off, and then I'll kind of tell you what I'm feeling and learning these days. So one test is called LEAP, and it's by Oxford Biomedical, and they have different versions, but the biggest one measures 150 foods and substances for an inflammatory reaction. So it's not an allergy test. It is a test of an inflammatory reaction. They test a bunch of different markers, and I kind of forget them all, but they'll put your blood, you know, against the food substance or whatever and see how it reacts. And you just know, you know, what foods are causing like an inflammatory reaction, like we talked about before. And some of those are foods that you overeat, you know, you just eat too much and now it's causing some irritation. Some are random foods that you don't have that much, but something about your body reacts to them. And then some are kind of in the middle, like things, you know, you might be surprised to see. So I did that test last summer, and then I took 3 months off the things. And I would say that those 3 months, I had a lot less inflammation in my body. Like my joints didn't hurt. My energy was really good. A couple of my foods on there were tea and chocolate. So I was having no caffeine, which also is really good for your gut, because caffeine kind of thins the gut. So a lot of things went really well for me in those 3 months. So I don't think, and you know, it doesn't mean you have to stay off those things forever, or that you can't maybe change some of that profile, but it was informative. So I think for people who are like, I just feel like everything bothers me, or they're in some kind of acute situation, you know, that can be an option. Another test is stool test, which people probably have heard about. So I was just learning that stool tests, you know, they can never actually use it like in a lab study, because they are somewhat inconsistent. They are only measuring basically what's coming out of the end of your colon. It's not measuring the entire colon. So you can have some false negatives. They always say a positive is a positive. If they find a parasite in there, you've got a parasite in there. But that little sample that they got, you know, even if I think the company that we use is pretty good, but, you know, there can be false negatives. So it's good to know. But I think it can also give you good information if you're feeling just really fed up with your gut, and, you know, can see for bacterial imbalance or H. pylori or parasites and this kind of thing. The company we use is BioHealth, and they do collect samples like over a 3-day period. So it's not just one sample. So I think that improves the accuracy. So I'll get into a little bit more pros and cons about that. Last one I'll mention is basically a leaky gut test. It's a urine test where you drink this sugary solution, and the two sizes of molecules in there, and one is supposed to be representative of a nutrient and should be able to pass and absorb, and the other larger one should not. So basically they see what comes out in your urine. You know, you should be getting those big molecules through to your urine because they should not have absorbed. and you should have less of the small molecules because they should have absorbed. So if that's opposite, then they know there's a leaky gut problem.
Oh, wow. Okay. So those are really good tests for people to start with. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, yeah, I'll tell you kind of like where my head is at a little bit with all of this. I actually just interviewed a microbiologist for about 2 hours yesterday, so I have kind of a fresh perspective on some of this stuff. So
share it with us, girl.
I know. I was like, now add some confusion. You know, we don't know a lot about the microbiome yet. We think we know a lot because we're all excited and we're learning, and that's great. But we don't totally know. So, for instance, to, like, go in and identify, like, I had H. pylori positive on a test that I ran in the summer. And, you know, I do have chronic digestive stuff, so I was excited to see it and treat it. However, you know, we all have H. pylori. It's just a matter of how much. And we can maybe use other ways than going in and focusing on, okay, I got to kill off this or kill off that. We can just go in and rebuild the gut. And I guess you could say I'm working on like what I think is my best protocol for that. So there's a probiotic that this microbiologist developed that is very good, and that can really change the gut environment. We'll talk about some other things that can change the gut environment. But, you know, for a while there, I thought, oh, no, you absolutely have to test. And now I'm kind of softening, you know. Maybe you don't have to test as long as you have a strong protocol to rebuild the gut.
Okay. That's a good point, because I think a lot of people feel like they don't have access to testing. So that's, I think, really helpful.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, you know, especially when we're online like this, right? We have to kind of accommodate people all over.
Absolutely. I know. I totally agree with that. And like I said, I think that testing also, in a lot of instances, can feel really daunting for people. So if they can, they have access to a protocol that they think will help their, you know, help their gut issues, then I think that would be really useful. So speaking of protocol, tell me, do you have anything that you can, that people can implement right away to start to improve their gut function if they're experiencing like the classic signs that we were talking about earlier, like the bloating and the alternation between constipation and diarrhea and, you know, and any kind of like burping or gas or pain, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Okay. So I have a long-ish list, so I'll just read it all off. And then if you have any questions, you can ask me. So probiotic foods and supplements. I'm not a big fan of pasteurized dairy, but like coconut yogurt and kombucha and raw sauerkraut and kimchi. However, if you react to those things, they're not a fit for everyone, then just discontinue them. Don't have them. If you have SIBO or some histamine sensitivity, you could have a negative reaction. Or if you have like yeast overgrowth. So just if it doesn't fit, don't do it. Something that probably fits for most people is just a wide variety of fruits and veggies. So I was listening to a guy once from the Human Microbiome Project, and he said 20 different fiber substances a week. So, you know, if you're only getting 5 different vegetables a week, really think about what else you can have, because all the different types of fiber feed different bacteria. It creates more diversity in your gut, and that's a pretty easy one to do. Some things that can help with that.
Really love that. I love like the idea of 20 different fiber or foods a week that contain fiber, I assume veggies and fruit, right? So just alternate between different ones rather than continuing to eat the same thing over and over again, because it's going to help to expand your microbiome.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, a little kind of, I guess, not against paleo is also things like potatoes and beans feed your bifidum bacteria in your gut. And so they have their own types of fiber too. So unless you just feel like you really, really don't tolerate those, you know, maybe have a, I'm actually a fan of beans, you know, have some beans and let that fiber feed your gut. You can also, you know, use a CSA or go, that's community supported acupuncture where you get like, or agriculture where you get like a box of food.
Same thing.
They'll give you like a lot of weird stuff, you know, they'll give you tons of weird stuff. So it's kind of nice because you'll try new stuff. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll go through some more. So cooking your own food, because when you smell it, it starts digestion. Chewing, eating in a relaxed environment. Avoiding liquids with your meals. You know, in China, they don't even serve you a beverage when you go out for a meal. So just think about that. You need your digestive enzymes.
I feel like that would be blasphemy in the United States, right?
No, you always have to have a huge glass of ice water. Yeah, so that dilutes your stomach acid. So if you're drinking a lot of water or whatever with your meal, just, you know, you can have a few sips, but don't go crazy. Some other things that can help your digestion, using a bitters tincture or having bitter greens that stimulate your digestion, having a small salad before your meal. You can use apple cider vinegar like on your salad or have it in a little shot, and that stimulates digestion. Lemon and water stimulates digestion.
Awesome.
And taking a walk after lunch or dinner can be a nice way to just help you digest.
I feel like that one last thing, the taking the walk, is so huge for me after meals. I just feel like movement changes everything. Yeah, if you just sort of sit, you know, go back to your desk and sit after eating, it just, I don't know, there's something about it. It feels very stagnant. But if you move a little bit, even just a little bit, like you said, like it could just be a 10-minute walk. I find that to be so effective in helping to speed or help the digestive process along.
Yeah, I'll mention China. Yeah, you know, everybody walks after dinner. It's so adorable. You know, it's like, it's just still a cultural tradition there. So,
I love that.
I mean, I haven't been there in a while. Maybe it's changing. But, yeah, it's like they had certain things kind of built in that were better for our health that we accidentally lost along the way here in the States.
Yeah, accidentally. Well, I really appreciate you sharing all of that. I think those are some awesome tips, and you are such a wealth of knowledge, so I'm so happy you've been on here. I also really want to share with my audience the fact that you are hosting a Women's Wellness Summit, which I am going to be participating in, and I'm very, very thrilled about. It's happening on April 11th to the 18th, I believe, right?
Yes.
It is. Okay, awesome. So I just would love for you to share a little bit about that, how this came about, and what you're going to be offering to anyone who decides to sign up for this amazing free event.
Yeah, well, thanks. Like, this is not, we want to focus on hormones, but we'll do other ones in the future on other topics related to women's health, like nutrition or fertility. But we're starting with hormones because it's a big one and we need a lot of education around it. And you're providing some of that. We have a great conversation on missing periods or regular cycles. So we talk about some specific conditions like PCOS or Hashimoto's or endometriosis. We also talk about life stages, which I think is really fun. You and I talk a little bit about teenage years and kind of go through fertility and pregnancy and postpartum and perimenopause, because our hormones are changing so much as women. So we kind of need to know what we're going through and what will be coming up. And then we talk about things you can do at home, like, you know, food, lifestyle. And then we also share some resources you might want to get into, like Ayurveda or Chinese medicine. So it's a lot of lectures, and we'll give you a schedule so you can, you know, be sure to catch the ones that you most want to catch. And we'll do fun stuff for along the way, like raffles and that kind of a thing.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is like a really big deal. Yeah. I am so stoked because I feel like just this idea of doing a summit on hormones itself and how they impact us at all stages of our lives is so crucial, because, you know, we've been sort of fed this story that your body, your hormones are these scary sort of mysterious things that just sort of happen to us, and we're kind of a victim of them. And that just doesn't need to be the case. So I'm super stoked that you're sharing this and empowering women on this journey through life and navigating hormonal health, because it's a thing. I mean, everyone I talk to has had or is experiencing some kind of hormonal imbalance. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, it's like such a huge population. So, you know, I hope as many women as possible will find the event and will share it with their girlfriends and that kind of a thing. Because, yeah, like even very smart, super productive women often know very little about their hormones. And like you said, they just feel like a victim of their hormones that are pulling all the strings, and you can start to take back control.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I know. I completely agree with that. I think that the more we can put out there this message of empowerment and just understanding and body literacy for especially young women, the better. I mean, we just are in a place now where I think we're at this tipping point where this kind of information is really being sought out, and we're now at a great place, I think, to be sharing this kind of work. So I'm really happy that you're doing that. And for everyone who's listening, you can sign up for Bridget's Women's Wellness Summit at bit.ly/Women's Wellness Summit. And the description is also in the radio show description too. So you'll have the link in there as well. So I want to thank you again, Bridget, for coming on the show. This is so great. You're so informative. And hopefully there'll be thousands and thousands of women who participate in your summit.
Thanks, Nicole. And yeah, I'm always so happy to collaborate with you. So I'm gonna keep hitting you up over the years.
Right back at you. I know. Same here. It's so good. I love the collaboration. This is so awesome. And again, I really appreciate you being on and sharing your wisdom. And I will speak with you real soon.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.